Welcome to the Tracy Sandler Show. I am your host, Tracy Sandler. I am thrilled to welcome back to the show Mike Golic Jr. Last time we were talking important things like draft snack, which we're going to get into snacks for sure because we must. But today is first day of free agency. The quote unquote legal tampering period has begun or began earlier today on Monday when we're recording this. This will come out on Tuesday. I love the term legal tampering period because like 90 minutes and you had some pretty major contracts that had totally been hammered out. And it's a lot of really good work for quote unquote 90 minutes. But the legal tampering period began on Monday. Wednesday, the new league year begins. We just had the Super Bowl. We just had the combine. And here we go. But the day has had quite a bit of news. Let's start with Kirk Cousins because he really was the big quarterback domino that everybody needed to fall. Russell Wilson might like a word on that, but I'm going to stick by this, that Kirk Cousins was the domino. And he has himself a new team in the Atlanta Falcons. What do you think, Mike?
So there's a lot of elements that go into this with Kirk Cousins, but I think it's funny that we were all waiting for this to be the domino that fell. And Kirk Cousins was overwhelmingly the crown jewel of this free agency class, in a part largely because of positional value at quarterback. And looking at the rest of the market, it's just wild to think that 36-year-old Kirk Cousins, which he will be when he takes his first snap for them this fall, coming off an Achilles injury, going to the most memeable franchise, or at the very least on the medal stand, for one of those memeably bad franchises in the NFL is inspiring as much confidence in me as it is. Obviously, coming back from injury, that's a legitimate concern that people need to buy into, but there is so much to like about this from the football standpoint, especially relative to the rest of that division with the pieces we know they have on offense, with Zach Robinson, their offensive coordinator, coming from the McVay coaching tree that's got so much of what Kirk Cousins does well built into it, and knowing the strides that defense made last year in Atlanta before Raheem Morris even got there. I think all of that has you feeling good about it. It's just obviously a big price tag. Now, the structure of this deal seems a little bit more favorable than the initial terms maybe being reported. But listen, there's no doubt Kirk Cousins was going to go out here and get money. Once we saw what Baker Mayfield got, Kirk Cousins making $90 million guaranteed in the first couple of years seemed like a given because this is the biggest hero at the bank we have in the league right now.
BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team and remember to use promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. And Kirk Cousins, and I know a lot of jokes have been made about this on Twitter, but in all seriousness, I mean, and joking, this man has an ability to get paid like nothing I've ever seen. You'd think he'd won like six Super Bowls and is perennially in the championship game. And he's yet to really win anything except our hearts and quarterback. He won my heart. I feel like he won a lot of hearts in the show quarterback, and there's something to be said for that. But like all joking aside, it's pretty incredible. It's also a real, what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe not indictment, but kind of on the state of quarterbacking in the NFL.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, though, is when you think about what Kirk Cousins affords you, he's like buying bonds, right? He's very stable. You know what you're going to get with Kirk Cousins. And while that hasn't translated into a ton of playoff wins, and remember, contextually for Minnesota and why maybe they weren't as willing to pony up in the ways that Atlanta was, is he was brought there after 2017 to be the difference for them between getting deep into the postseason and then actually going to win the Super Bowl. And that didn't materialize with them, but he still puts up a lot of stats. On his best day, He's a, you know, mid to high top 10 quarterback in the NFL when he's playing incredibly well. And he's very familiar with the most in vogue system in the NFL right now. And so when you have all of those traits and you're Raheem Morris getting ready to start on your second chance at being a head coach in the NFL, and you're the Atlanta Falcons in an infinitely winnable division right now, no disrespect to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, this is a move that immediately comes in and elevates the floor to a place where if he's healthy, it at least makes you incredibly competitive. Now, do I think it makes them a Super Bowl contender? No, because history has shown us otherwise so far with Kirk Cousins in that way. Not the quarterback wins the hell out of this, but it does get you into a place where, again, I'm beating into the ground, but if he's able to come back healthy and stay on the field where he fits in with this style of offense, and oh, by the way, the young weapons they have on that team, it's hard not to get a little excited about.
Absolutely. And of course, the Achilles injury is a big one. And as you said, he is going to be 36 years old. And so much was made, of course, with Aaron Rodgers. He tears his Achilles 1 second into the Jets' first game. He's 39 years old coming back. It's not an easy injury to come back from under any circumstances at any age. And so I think it's also amazing he could command that money coming off the injury. But as you said, I really like what you said. He's stable. You know what you're getting. And I think there is absolutely something to be said for that. I'm kind of excited for this Kirk Cousins era in the NFL. In Atlanta. It is a winnable division. You brought up the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Of course, Baker Mayfield is staying. Mike Evans is staying. It's also kind of good for the league, not to get like on a soapboxy kind of thing. But when it's not like you look at the NFC South now and you're like, well, someone's got to win it. So maybe it'll be them. Now you have a little competition there, which I think gets interesting and gets fun. And it's fun for all of us if there's like a few good teams and not just one in each division.
Yeah, I completely agree. Having a laughingstock division, while it's sort of unavoidable given we're in a salary cap league and there's so much that changes year over year and injury is such an overwhelming factor, it's going to happen. But for the NFC South, remember, just coming off of what we had in the Brady era, like you had the sun and the moon of the NFL down in that division for a couple year stretch. They were able to win a Super Bowl, obviously. Before that, you had the Saints competitive for long stretches under Sean Payton. You had the Panthers as at least an interesting team with Cam Newton for so many years, making a Super Bowl appearance, winning an MVP there. And so as that whole division has turned over to something new, yeah, the Buccaneers are going to walk into this year with a lot more early respect than they did last year. Baker Mayfield certainly leading the charge on that. And then there's a lot of interesting in that division, right? The Saints continue to try and march forward with a lot of their core in place surrounding their quarterback. We've got to see what's going to happen with Bryce Young this year. How does that reclamation project go in year two for the former number one overall pick? But to have two teams that come in and at least appear competent right off the bat's a huge win.
So 49ers fans, we are going to talk about the 49ers, I swear. But you bring up a point talking about divisions, and I want to talk about the division that Kirk Cousins just left, because this NFC North, obviously, well, gave the 49ers a lot of fits. There you guys go. There's my little 49ers segue before we get into actual 49ers news. But did give the 49ers fits in the playoffs. They almost lose to the Packers. They almost lose to the Lions. The Lions, obviously, I think we'll see them get better and better. But I want to talk about the Packers, who signed Josh Jacobs today at running back, and all kinds of running back news throughout the league. A position group that last summer was talked about as not getting much respect at all has had a day. Saquon Barkley goes from the Giants to the Philadelphia Eagles. I almost just said the Phillies, which would actually be much bigger news, but he goes to the Eagles. You have Austin Ekeler going to the Commanders, and of course, Josh Jacobs going to the Packers. So now you have a Packers team in the NFC North that I think improves. No disrespect for Aaron Jones, who played so well for them. So that whole thing, and I'd love your take on this, was like a little bit confusing to me, but he gets released. They signed Josh Jacobs. What do you think happened there? Is maybe Josh Jacobs really isn't that much better than Aaron Jones, but I always thought Aaron Jones was so productive in Green Bay that did confuse me the tiniest bit.
Yeah, Aaron Jones and was productive for them in spots last season, especially late in the year. But I think right now, the premium on youth in the running back department, we knew Josh Jacobs and Saquon Barkley because they're 25 and 26 were probably going to command more than most everyone else. It feels funny that the Green Bay Packers, who were already one of the youngest teams in professional football last year, had decided to just go full Leonardo DiCaprio. And if anyone's over the age of 28, they're getting them up out of the paint right now. So Aaron Jones, you know, still south of 30, and I think still could be really productive. I saw Lance Zierlein, who does a great job covering Houston sports, mention his name as a potential target for the Texans. And I think that would be a phenomenal fit given the scheme that they run down there, Bobby Slowick, and the kinds of schemes that would be familiar to a guy like Aaron Jones, who could come over and help give them a boost at that position for a run game that was pretty bad most of last year. I think would be a good fit. But for Josh Jacobs, listen, a little bit younger, you can get him over there on a team that is ascending right now, that wants to continue to build that ground game around what they've got now at Jordan Love at quarterback. And so it's nice to see for these running backs, they're being treated like weapons, and they're probably the biggest beneficiaries, maybe outside of offensive guards, of the big bump in the salary cap that we saw overall this year. I thought Bill Smith, who does a great job as the director of Next Gen Stats over at the NFL Network, posed it like this when someone tweeted about the Saquon Barkley deal: is, would you rather pay $13 million a year for Saquon Barkley at this point, or for Gabe Davis with what he got going down to the Jacksonville Jaguars as the number two receiver leaving Buffalo? And I think most of us would say, overwhelmingly, looking at the production of the two, yeah, you feel like you'd probably get more bang for your buck out of Saquon Barkley doing it in the immediacy in the next few years while he's young, and try and get a lot of those best years there while you've got the extra money to spend. So a big, big day for running backs, no doubt.
And it's funny when you bring up the age. In my head, Josh Jacobs has been in the league forever, and he's at least 30 years old, but he is significantly younger. Same with Saquon Barkley. I mean, it does feel like football years are not the same as real people years. And it does feel like these guys have been in the league forever. But yeah, 25, 26 years old. Let's talk Saquon to the Eagles, because basically what I'm doing, I've now just decided this. We're just going to go with teams that the 49ers will look at as major competition, and then we're going to get to the 49ers. But it's been kind of a bigger day for everybody else. But I think for Saquon Barkley, this is an opportunity to see the Saquon Barkley that we've always wanted to see in the NFL. Certainly, he's been incredibly productive, battled a number of injuries, but now he's with Jalen Hurts, and he's in at an Eagles team that certainly fell off at the end of the season, but I don't expect them to be a bad team, and that is a good offense. I think it's going to be fun. I know Giants fans don't like it, but my one little PSA to that is, like, these guys have only so long in the league. And one play and it's all over, and you got to go where you're wanted and where they're going to pay you. And I'll never blame a player for that. So sorry he went to the rival, but I get over it, Tiki and everybody else.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's we don't need to be pocket watching out here. And Tiki should understand as well as anybody how this league works and how fleeting the opportunities are at this position in particular. We saw an existential crisis for these guys. They were they were willingly getting on Zoom meetings. Think about that. We all hate doing Zoom meetings for the most part, unless we got to for our jobs. And they decided to do an extra one because the situation felt so dire for running backs last year. And so, for Saquon, and I think this is the point that's I've been talking about with the running back market a lot in the last couple of years, is look at the case of, we'll tie it to the 49ers. Christian McCaffrey is a prime example of the way you can approach building around the running back in this league if you're a team that's mature in your team building process, if you're further along in the cycle. Christian's a phenomenal player. There was not much he was going to be able to do given the things they didn't have on that roster in Carolina for so much of his time there, versus you get him over into an offense that's much healthier overall, that's got a schematic advantage with the play caller, that's got all these other needs met. And now you could feature him in ways that make him a nightmare for opposing defenses. And I think with Saquon Barkley, while the Eagles, no doubt, have to do some things differently on offense, and that's going to be the task for Kellen Moore coming over there, is give them better answers against pressure, get Jalen Hurts feeling more comfortable like he was 2 years ago in that run, and maybe not be as stagnant up front. You've still got what will be by far, even with the retirement of Jason Kelce, the best offensive line that Saquon Barkley's ever run behind. And much like he had with Daniel Jones, but I think in an offense more willing to use it frequently, you've got a quarterback whose legs are also an added value for a running back in the backfield and opening up lanes. And so they just re-signed Landon Dickerson there, who's been one of the best young guards in football. Cam Jurgens, they drafted out of Nebraska to be the replacement. Jason Kelce helped them draft him. He helped the Eagles scouting department look him up, as we learned with his interview with Adam Lefkoe years ago around the draft. And so I think that, plus Jeff Stoutland, the offensive line coach, gives you a really solid foundation for Saquon to go in and be able to have a really good chance at having success.
So I sat next to Kellen Moore on my flight out of the combine, And he was so nice. He helped me with my suitcase. And I didn't, he had a hat on kind of low. And so I didn't fully recognize him. And I said, "Were you here for the combine?" He's like, "Yeah, I am. I was." And he was like, "Were you?" I was like, "Oh, yeah, I'm a reporter. I cover the 49ers. And he's like, "I'm with the Eagles." And I was like, "Oh, what do you do with the Eagles?" And he's like, "I'm the offensive coordinator." And I was like, "You're Kellen Moore. It's really nice to meet you." He's like, "I am. It's nice to meet you too."
Kellen Moore's got one of those like very nondescript looking faces, though. He looks very regular.
Totally. And the hat was down. And it was funny. We were going to Dallas. He had a connection. And my brother lives in Dallas. So that's where I was going. And so he was going to Dallas. And as I realized, I was like, all of it. And then it felt very full circle because Dallas and the whole, anyways, but he was so nice. And again, he helped me with my suitcase. And I think that's very nice. And that was not a light suitcase because I was going from the combine to Dallas to see my brother and his family. And I refused to check a bag. And so the amount that I got into that. So Kellen Moore, thank you. And if he could deal with that suitcase, the Eagles are in great shape.
Hey, listen, traveling like playing blackjack is a team game. We all get there better and faster when we work together. And so kudos to Kellen Moore for going out. That's like the airport version of being the person that takes your grocery shopping cart back. That's instant good karma. And to me, an immediate green flag for a human being.
I totally agree with that. So go Eagles. Sorry for that. Don't get mad at me.
Go all Birds. Right,
yeah, go for it. Fly, Eagles, fly. Again, sorry, guys, don't get mad at me. It's a joke. But let's talk 49ers. Let's do it. They sign Leonard Floyd, or they're signing Leonard Floyd. They have for a while been looking for somebody opposite Nick Bosa. And I'm going to back up a little bit because, of course, we have the news that Arik Armstead is being released. He did not want to take a pay cut, which I 100% understand. I understand why they asked. I understand why he said no. I think everybody... Again, my little PSA soapbox, it is a business and everybody is trying to do business in the best way that they can. So I will go with that, because I had people, a couple of people today be like, "I can't believe they'd even ask him for a pay cut." And I'm like, "What? This is the league. This is the business. He's 30 years old. He's missed 13 games the last 2 years. He's been tremendous for San Francisco," but I understand the reasoning on all sides. So I bring that up because Leonard Floyd felt like, last year at free agency, the 49ers made a huge splash with Javon Hargrave, and people didn't expect it. We as beat writers didn't expect it. I would say this time they made, maybe it's not a splash, but like some splashes, maybe not like a big splash, but like for those of you listening, you don't see that I'm making this like hand motion when you're like swimming in the water and making some of that splashes. But I think this is a really durable, good value signing for San Francisco. Really, since Dee Ford, they haven't had somebody on the other end. They're not looking to spend tremendous money. I know a lot of people wanted Jonathan Grenard. We saw the deal he signed, so it wasn't going to be him. Danielle Hunter, at least at the time that we are recording this podcast, is still available. I don't think Leonard Floyd keeps them from making other moves along the line, but I think this is a good get for them and might be what they need on that other end.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, he's got a lot of familiarity with Brandon Staley. They've obviously been together at a number of stops there. And I think he's got a lot of experience in being exactly what you're looking for him to do in his last couple of stops. Now, injury pressed him into a little bit more of that Buffalo last season, but he's been productive. You know, you look back at the last 4 years, 10 and a half sacks, 9.5 sacks, 9 sacks, 10 and a half sacks, being the number two guy, especially the way he was in Los Angeles. When you had Von Miller there for the Super Bowl run, where you had Aaron Donald there on the interior, he knows how to get down when the eyes are occupied elsewhere. And Nick Bosa is your dude. You've got your ace in the hole already. And so Leonard Floyd is a guy with familiarity with the coordinator and familiarity in that role as the number two edge rusher there, in a position that, listen, we know the 49ers have been trying to answer the bell on. They tried to swing for Chase Young at the deadline. It worked well in the immediacy. It didn't age well when we got to the postseason. And so now, as he hits free agency, they're moving on. And I think this is ultimately a pretty good find.
And I saw some people on social media, and again, I realize Twitter is not a real place, but I saw people on social media saying, "Well, I don't think this means they can't re-sign Chase Young." I don't know what they would want to resign Chase Young. I mean, like you said, it worked well in the immediacy, did not age well in the playoffs. He played well in the Super Bowl. And if you're going to pick a game to play well in, that's certainly a good one to pick. But I don't know that it's a need anymore or it's a want anymore. Now they're going to have to figure something out on the interior of the line. And they have other needs at corner and on offensive line. And what are they going to do with Ayuk? And there are just other things that they're going to have to deal with that I don't know that Chase Young is even somebody they really would be interested in bringing back. No offense. I'm sure that if he were to listen to this, he'd be like, well, I'm kind of offended, but no offense. I'm not sure it's a great fit anymore.
Yeah. And like you said, it all kind of depends on the number for a lot of these things. Like, I don't know what Chase Young's market looks like, given some of the other pass rushers that you mentioned. We know Danielle Hunter, if it doesn't work out there in Minnesota, is going to immediately jump up and be the number one prize of this free agent class remaining. So, yeah, I don't know what that looks like. But, you know, at the very least, now you insulate yourself from that loss if it does come, which most people expect.
I'm not sure. The Chase Young market is kind of an interesting one to keep an eye on because there's the potential. But are you at a certain point, I think you might be past paying for the potential. So sure. I think he and his representation are probably going to have to be a little bit realistic, but this is not a Chase Young podcast. So I think we can move forward. I am going to start my campaign now for Chris Jenkins, because basically what I do every year, Mike, is campaign for the Michigan players I want on the 49ers. I started a series last year called Predictable Picks that I do with Jake Moody and Ronnie Bell. And honestly, the more the merrier. But you need to be a Michigan player, because the point is you pick how many points Michigan's going to win by each week. Mm. So I will say Nick Bosa was a great sport. He was on it for Ohio State. He was on it for the Natty. Kittle's on it for Iowa. Like, we have some fun with it, but I'm starting my Chris Jenkins campaign. I'd already been on a Mike Sanrestel campaign for Nickel Corner. I'm on my AJ Barner campaign. So basically I'm just campaigning for as many Michigan players as possible. And as long as I'm throwing out names, Blake Corum, let's just add a little running back depth. But I actually think Mikey Sanrestel, that one is my big one. That's my Jake Moody of this year. Last year, I was big Jake Moody advocate and it worked. Kept talking about it, kept tweeting about it, kept talking about it on any show I was guesting on and my own. So now Mike Sanrestel, which leads me to my next question to you. Cornerback for the 49ers. They are very good on the outside with Diamador Lenore and Charvarius Ward. CB3 has been an issue for them. The nice thing about Lenore, of course, is he has versatility. So he can also come in. If they were to sign somebody else for the outside, he could be the guy to play nickel. How important do you think it is for them to make a splash in that in free agency? Or how important, or do you think that's more something they can deal with in the draft? Or both?
I think at this point, if you've got options in free agency, and I'm not as aware of the current standing of the free agent class for the NFL, because we've seen some deals already get made today with some guys in the secondary, mostly the safety market that's kind of gone to work today outside of, I think, a trade for the Lions. But I think for the 49ers, if you can afford to in positions like that, especially knowing you're being graded now against the Kansas City Chiefs, like you're expected to be that team going against them. And so as I'm sure they're going to adjust and add receiver in the draft and try and start, you know, work around those things there, you want to make sure you're loaded up for those critical moments when you were able to force Mahomes and company to drop back and pass all last year. And man, unless you can get the right guy and the right pedigree in the draft, I'd always err on the side of a good free agent for compelling teams that are, again, further along in their team cycle. The 49ers don't have time to wait. You're in the last year of the Brock Purdy rookie deal, so you might as well swing big on that now. If you can, I think offensive line, probably the more pressing need, especially along the interior. And so I'd say your probably money's probably better spent there, because that's really a spot. Corner and offensive line are super similar in this way, but both incredibly unnatural skill sets that required you to work together with a few other guys and also go backwards against the best athletes on the planet. But I just think where we're at with offensive line player on the league right now, you kind of need to have someone who's going to be able to come in there and technically hold their own right off the bat. I saw a mock that had the 49ers taking Amarius Mims out of Georgia at 31. And I just don't know if that's the kind of pick you can afford to make if you're San Francisco on this timeline right now. Ton of potential in the player, but also incredibly raw and going to need time to work. And you don't have a lot of time right now.
And that is the thing with offensive linemen. Very rarely do they come in the league in their first year. And do they produce at the level that maybe they produce at in year two and year three? And you're right. 1 year left on this Brock Purdy deal. The window, they don't like talking about windows, but the window is closing. And we're seeing it. We talked about Eric Armstead. There have been lots of things floating around about Kyle Juszczyk. I mean, there are hard decisions that they're going to have to continue to make, be it this season or next season. But if you want to make them next season, then this is your season to win. And you are right. They are going up against the Kansas City Chiefs. And there's a report that Rayshon Jenkins is going to be visiting the 49ers, and people are like, safety, but you have Talanoa Hufanga coming off an ACL, and they need DB depth. I think the more DBs, the better. And we see it in the league every year. We certainly see it on that team that They have a lot of injuries there. It's a tough position to play. So they need the depth, but offensive line is the big one. And that is something we saw in the Super Bowl. The first half, the protection for Brock Purdy was fantastic. The second half, it really did fall off. They can't afford for that. They need to deal with the right side. And something I talked about last week with Mike Silver is they also have to start preparing to deal with the left side, because we saw what happened when Trent Williams was injured for a few games. He has played a lot of football. When we talk about football years, he is 36 years old. That is, you know, high in football years. They have to start preparing there. But those are not positions that grow on trees, and they're going to be tough positions to fill. But those, I think that is the biggest area of need for this team. Again, a team that lost by 3 points in overtime in the Super Bowl. So we're not exactly looking at a team here. Like, I saw 49er fans all day be like, what are they doing? Like, well, I mean, let's be a little bit realistic about where they are right now. This is not a team in a rebuild, but they have holes that they need to fill and things that they need to think about. And so I guess that's what we'll see from them over the next few days.
Yeah, I think it's always tough when you're one of the haves, because you're right, your needs are lesser, but you know, you've also seen, we talk about the Kansas City sized elephant in the room. You've seen things going on with that team, right? Where they're getting good news about Travis Kelce's coming back and you're able to re-sign Chris Jones, and they're probably going to get a pretty decent haul if they end up tagging and trading L'Jarius Sneed, or if they don't and they have him play on the franchise tag, or they get a long-term deal worked out with all that extra money, because you've got a quarterback contract you can move money around constantly on with Mahomes knowing where he's at. There's a lot of good headlines for that team so far this offseason. And we're all human. We all get competitive and see that, even if we understand their teams in different places for different reasons.
And T. Higgins requesting a trade in Cincinnati, I do think creates an interesting wrinkle is the right word there. But the Chiefs certainly were able to win the Super Bowl, and Patrick Mahomes, you know, he's magic and he's going to make it work, but they could use a receiver. And it will be interesting to see. I don't know that the Bengals really want to trade T. Higgins to the Chiefs, but I wouldn't be shocked if you see T. Higgins in a Chiefs uniform next year. There's my random take. Lukewarm take today.
It'd be terrifying. Really, anyone in the back end of the first round in this year's NFL draft, probably worth picking up the phone and seeing if the Bengals will at least think about sending him your way there. It's an incredibly deep receiver draft, but at the same time, T. Higgins, much more of a proven commodity there. Maybe not the true alpha number one, although we saw with Ja'Marr Chase out last year, he stepped up plenty in certain moments. But that's a guy that if you're a team that's getting ready to put your foot all the way down on the gas right now, can come in and instantly help you in a way that maybe is a little bit more up in the air once we get down later in the first round and we're talking about names like Xavier Worthy, who's the speedster, but a little bit undersized, and guys like that.
The draft is going to be, it's going to be an interesting draft. I mean, I think I feel this way every year, and I think every draft class has different areas where they're particularly deep, and so it makes them seem super interesting. But I'm kind of excited for this year's draft. I'm excited for this year's draft class. So college football has changed so much that I don't know. I'm just kind of excited for all of it, and not just because there's so many Michigan players in the draft.
No, it would never be that self-serving as I sit here in Notre Dame gear. Not at all.
Never. I should have really run and put on like a JJ McCarthy t-shirt, which, speaking of which,
oh man,
I brought him up. I did that on purpose because I do need to bring him up like once a podcast. I'm going to be a very big fan of wherever he ends. I'm already a Chargers fan now, bolt up, because of Jim Harbaugh. So going to be a big JJ McCarthy fan. Where do you think, I felt like the Vikings were a good spot for JJ McCarthy. Maybe they sign a Sam Darnold and, you know, you bring in JJ McCarthy, who learns a little bit from Sam Darnold. I think that's a really good fit for him. I don't know if he'll still be there. They may have to move up. But where do you see the great J.J. McCarthy ending up?
Yeah, I've been a little bit more of a skeptic on his NFL transition than some in this current draft cycle there. There's no doubting the tools and ability, certainly. We just never saw it replicated nearly as much because Michigan didn't need to or didn't want to for the majority of his time there under center. Minnesota would probably be where my comfort level started. I mean, I know we've seen some people starting to drift him up near the top three quarterbacks that we've seen, and that's rich for my blood. But I think Minnesota now becomes the perfect marriage of position in the draft where I think J.J. McCarthy might actually wind up going, and also now a need at the position that would also satisfy your star receiver that you're going to try and continue to stick around and make happy, and Justin Jefferson, who's coming up on an extension right now, who I'd imagine is not going to be thrilled with the idea of potentially taking a step back and having to work through a rookie that needs some help. So you're going to have to massage this situation the right way if you want that guy to stick around and be the bridge program for whoever you're bringing in.
I am interested to see how his NFL career goes, because I always felt like JJ, and I'm going to preface this with, I love JJ McCarthy, love him so much, but I felt like another year in college wouldn't have hurt him. But I get it. He won a national championship. His coaches leave. Like, what more do you have to prove? He always made the big throw when he had to. He did it in tight windows. I mean, I think he's an incredible talent. He was on a team that ran the ball a lot, and as you said, didn't need him as much. But I'm interested to see, do I think he will end up a very good NFL quarterback? Yes, I do. But I'm interested to see how his first year goes. And that's why I wonder, if you are the Vikings, do you draft him, but sign a veteran that he at least has to compete with in camp and kind of see, you know, where they are? Maybe a veteran who starts the season and JJ comes in a month or two in. I don't know if that's the Minnesota Vikings, but that might be where they are right now. Because again, when we go back to the beginning of this podcast and talk about the state of quarterbacking in the league, there aren't that many people left, really. And Gardner Minshew is getting a two-year, $25 million contract. And this is, again, no disrespect to Gardner Minshew, but Gardner Minshew and Chase Young are going to be like, your no offense and no disrespect is not.
Yeah.
Like, you can preface it with that, but we're really, once what comes next is not amazing. But I mean, that's where we are. And he's going to be competing with Aiden O'Connell. Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't know, is ever getting on the field again as a starter. So I'm just generally talking about the state of quarterbacking in this league. So I don't know. It's going to be kind of interesting to see.
I think the three teams in range down there at 11, 12, 13 in Minnesota, the Denver Broncos that now have a void at quarterback, yes, that needs to get filled, and the Las Vegas Raiders. I still will be interested to see what the Raiders decide to do in this draft, just because I don't think anyone looks at Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew and says the future quarterback of our team is on this roster. And so maybe they get aggressive. A team like the Giants, I think, is the biggest, one of the most interesting teams in the draft, just because Rich Eisen goes on his show after the combine, talks about the rumors he hears. And one of them was that he heard the New York Giants are done with Daniel Jones. They're looking to move on, and they're in range right now. There's a chance the Giants could improve this season if, let's say, you went out there and drafted Joe Alt to help shore up your offensive line there. And in this deep receiver draft, you were able to get another one of these productive guys into the second and third round and help shore it up. You've already improved the defense by adding personnel and Brian Burns. And so if you're better and all of a sudden out of range for a quarterback next year, and Daniel Jones shows you the same brand of quarterback he's been, which is good, but maybe not good enough for you to feel comfortable doing this long term. Well, now all of a sudden you're potentially out of range unless you can trade back and recruit draft capital for next year. So I think they're in an interesting spot of, yeah, you're paying Daniel Jones enough to where he's going to be there, but could it be, as the guy that plays out this season, while you've got another quarterback you bring in there as a rookie to try and mold to be that next wave for Brian Daboll and company?
Oh, I like this. I like this for JJ. This, I don't like the Raiders for JJ. I want better for him. I like this Giants idea for JJ McCarthy. I think you have brought up a lot of points that now would make me happy if that's where he ends up. So I just don't want you guys to think I'm biased towards the Michigan guys or anything like that.
No, none of us are biased doing this job. All of us are completely objective journalists.
100%. Well, I'm objective about the 49ers, but I am not objective about Michigan football. Who's your favorite Notre Dame guy in the draft?
Oh, I mean, listen, Joe Alt's going to be the first guy off the board for Notre Dame. I think he's the one that most people are familiar with in this draft. But I'd say out of that, there's a couple of other intriguing prospects. But to me, Audric Estime was such a compelling back for them. Deep backfield at Notre Dame this last year. They got a lot of young studs coming up there that got a bunch of carries in that offense. But time and time again, you looked at a player that made the group in front of him better in Audric Estime, that comes in and is immediately a mature three down back. He's a great pass protector, someone who's active and willing in that phase of the game, which we also always know is a big difference maker for rookies when you can keep them on the field on that down. And so I've been saying all offseason, to your point about trying to speak things into existence, right now we just saw Gus Edwards sign with the aforementioned Chargers, led by Jim Harbaugh, who wants his big back out there so they can do downhill nasty things there. You're going to have a void there in that backfield in Baltimore. What a pairing with Keaton Mitchell it would be to have a 230-plus pound back again in a guy who also, I know he didn't run as well at the combine as people hoped, Audric Estime, but turn on the tape and tell me you don't see a guy that consistently is able to pull away and make plenty of dudes miss. So I think it'd be a great fit for that team right now. I hope it for him, because he was a great player at Notre Dame, incredible locker room guy there that everyone really enjoyed. And I think he's going to make some NFL team very happy, as we've talked about running backs winning and winning a lot today.
I am not a scout or a GM, which is for the best, because my whole team would just be made up of Michigan guys. But I would say, I would look at the tape over how someone ran at the combine. I'd rather see them in game action and how they did in those situations. And because everybody has a bad day. And if your bad day happened to be at the combine, that is unfortunate. But if you have good tape, then...
Well, and if we're going to hype up our team's quarterbacks there, I'll show some love to Sam Hartman. That man came in 1 year and embraced Notre Dame in a way that's very difficult to do. I think he leaves there beloved. He's obviously incredibly handsome and fed our jumbotron with content in the stadium. Absolutely. That made a lot of people in the crowd and at home on TV happy. But I think in a day and age, you talk about the 49ers, the Brock Purdyfication of the NFL, where maybe him, Aiden O'Connell, another guy that played a bunch of football, wasn't necessarily the traitsiest guy going into the NFL, but can walk in and immediately be able to absorb your playbook, have that moxie and command and high floor kind of thing. I think Sam is that kind of player with all the experience he has, high-end starting experience at the college level. I think he can be a mid-round guy for you, come in there and really help round out a quarterback room and just, you know, is an outstanding teammate. Seems like people raved about him in South Bend, got to meet and be around him a few times. And I think he's a special dude. So he's understanding and aware that he's not going to be the first quarterback off the board, but I absolutely think he can be an asset for a team.
Handsome, and that hair. He's got incredible hair, just flowing, flowing. Okay, before we get to snaps, since you brought up handsome quarterbacks, I would like your opinion on this. Is Jimmy Garoppolo ever going to play another snap of football in the NFL?
I don't think he's a starter. No, I mean, maybe.
Maybe ever.
You know what? I think we've seen, like, clearly he's an incredible teammate in that during all the noise that's ever accompanied him, we've never heard Jimmy Garoppolo raise alarms. We've never heard public complaints with Jimmy Garoppolo when you've got training camp battles with him and Trey Lance and all the different things that have gone on over the years. Like, that was never a guy that was sounding the alarms. He was always putting his head down and doing his job. Part of that is, hey, if I was handsome and rich, I'd probably be cool with most of what went on too, because things tend to work out for Jimmy Garoppolo. But I think when you're looking at backup quarterback decisions around the league, that can go into it a lot. If you've got starting experience, which he does at a decently high level, he won a bunch of games in the postseason during his tenure with the 49ers, and you're also someone that can be a resource to a younger player, that's going to be a good teammate, is a general good hang, all those things matter when you factor it in. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up as somebody's backup, but we know injury is the biggest factor in that for Jimmy Garoppolo after the last few years.
It is amazing. This is a tough business. And you had a guy who was playing the best football of his career. Fortunately, has another injury. Brock Purdy steps in, and that's the end of it. And now we'll probably never start again. It's just a tough, tough business that we cover. I was gonna say we work in, but neither of us play football, which you did at one point. I have never, which is for the best. But you did play football, so you know better than anybody what a tough business this is.
I'm glad I don't have to hit anyone anymore. I have to foam roll and stretch enough just to go to like Pilates and Orange Theory classes. It has given me a deep appreciation right now as a 34-year-old to watch guys getting later into their careers, especially, I mean, we talk about the quarterbacks all the time, but I'm looking at guys that were like my age range, peer-wise age range. Cam Hayward with the Steelers still out there doing his thing. I mean, there's so many guys that I have an unbelievable amount of respect for that go out there at this big age and have to try and go and actually play football. It's insane.
It is insane. And so what we're going to talk about are the things we get to do while we cover football, and that's eat snacks. So when you were last on, it was before the draft a couple years ago, and we did our top draft snacks. So we're in free agency, draft prep. I would like to know where your draft/free agency snacks stand at the moment. Let's go your top three, because this is the most important part of the podcast by far.
Of course, of course. You know what? I this offseason and really this past year, I've been on a big exploration of some of the more compelling alternative candies that have been on the market. I've done a lot of review videos, stuff that's hit the timeline. As candy companies try and take big swings, and I appreciate innovation in an industry that is so saturated that we know has so many players in it. And I've landed largely on a lot of the different Reese's shapes and varieties that you've seen. You know, the Reese's Fast Break bar that I believe is the most underrated bar in the game is second only to, I think, the Reese's Holiday Shapes in terms of their product list being the best right there. I got a bag of Reese's Clusters in my pantry right now that I'm waiting to bust open on a rainy day and try and make happen. So I would put right now, if I'm looking at like draft weekend snacks where you need quick energy, you need stuff that's going to help you out here. Peanut butter M&Ms, always built to party. I think they're the best M&M variety by far. Dense, rich, creamy, delicious. I would throw the Reese's Fast Break bar in there as well. Delightful, smooth, great little nougat base to it. All the great Reese's flavors, I think, in their best form and ratio. The third one is going to be tough. You know what I'll say? I had a really good time with coming off the holiday season. I got hold of these late. Snickers, who doesn't normally ring the alarm in terms of innovating their candy bar outside of some flavor changes or maybe throwing almonds in there. They did a holiday shaped Christmas tree that was a lot more of the caramel and nougat and a lot less of the peanuts mixed in. And it didn't have the ridge on top. I think we underrate the texture of the ridge in our eating experience with the Reese's. And so having a little bit of a smoother, or excuse me, eating these Snickers, having the ridge up top, I think having that smooth chocolate texture associated with a little bit of change up in the ratio was a pretty cool note and a very big surprise for me and how much I enjoyed it.
I wonder if they're going to do that with Easter eggs.
I hope so. Why not get in on the game? You've seen how much fun Reese has been having with this for years, Snickers. Go off.
Go off, Snickers. Look, this is our plea to Snickers, because I would love a Snickers Easter egg. And I actually, just on Sunday, had a few people over to watch the Oscars, and I made sure to get Reese's Easter eggs. Because I think in the eggs, you really get the peanut butter chocolate. It's talk about like a good ratio right there. So I just did that. So now I'm thinking I would like a Snickers in the shape of an Easter egg. So I'm going to tag Snickers in this and Reese's, because we should be sponsored, obviously. And let's get that going. I've been speaking, and now not just speaking Mikey Sanrisdil and Chris Jenkins into existence of the 49ers. I'm speaking Reese's, or not Snickers, Easter eggs. Maybe more importantly than the other two, let's be honest.
I was going to say, this one affects comparatively way more people. No disrespect to everybody who's a Michigan fan or a fan of, you know, the Niners who could end up with these guys, but there's a lot more people that consume Snickers and Reese's than there are 49ers fans, probably even there are NFL fans.
I would bet that is true. I don't have any stats for that in front of me, but I'm going to bet that that's absolutely true. So there's that. Mike, we're coming back.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
What were you going to say? You were going to say something about snacks, and I don't want to interrupt that. That's important.
I know. I was just going to say, this is a gut conversation. We're talking about what we're putting into our bodies, so you don't need stats and numbers to back that up. You know what? In the most important place, right down here where we're sending all that candy to go. So thank you for giving me a platform to talk about these kind of important matters. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for letting me talk about Michigan and throwing it in at points in our conversation that made no sense whatsoever. So I think everybody has won here today on this podcast. Happy free agency to all. Mike, let everybody know where they can find you, please.
Yes, at Mike Golic Jr. on all social media. Gojo and Golic is the podcast and show I do with my father on the DraftKings Network. We're 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, live Monday through Friday. You can also get us wherever you get your podcast, on the YouTube channel. We're on Samsung TV Plus and Roku and all these fun places. And we are at Gojo and Golic on all social media platforms as well. So you can check us out there. And we'll try and have a good time. And like we've mentioned here, the legal tampering period, which just makes it just sexy free agency. It makes it sound dangerous and a little bit elusive. Like we shouldn't be doing this. It's so wrong, but it's right, and we love it. And so legal tampering is the gift that keeps on giving to the league. I hope they never change the name.
It's a really good point. It's like, we shouldn't be doing this, but my heart wants what it wants. And what it wants is to legally tamper with you in your career.
Exactly. It feels like a forbidden romance right now. We're sexing up free agency a little bit.
It is. And then you like get the text from your sources to give you the, and you just feel like, ooh, this is all, yeah, you know what? I'm into it. They better never, just like the combine should never move from Indy, they should never change the name legal tampering. It's just, It's just too good. It really
got all the answers here.
We really do. This is just, you guys are all, you're welcome. We're glad that we helped you out today. You guys can find me on Twitter, X, whatever it's called, at TracyFGSN, on Instagram and TikTok at Tracy Sandler. We are brought to you by Bet Online. If you like what you heard, and how could you not have, because we talked about football and candy, make sure to give us a 5-star rating and a super positive review. And I think that's everything I have to say. With that, I'll see everybody next time. Bye, all.